now, it is time for the Media Beat with David Terechuk. David joins us, of course, on Friday Morning Live. And you can hear him also rebroadcast on the weekend and during our noontime news block. By the way, David, besides doing the show here, has his own website, themediabeat.us. You'll also find him contributing on the Huffington Post. And he's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And boy, his arms must be tired because I think he just got back from South by Southwest. Good morning, David.
Good morning to you. Yes, I've been at South by Southwest, as I was last week.
Now, are you home now, or are you still out in Texas?
I'm back in the media capital of the world, New York City.
See, yeah. It took you leaving the media. It took you leaving Texas to have Beto announce. You see.
Well, you know, while I was there, I did actually note. I was counting them. There were 9 Democratic potential candidates for the declared. Candidates for the presidency making their appearances at South by Southwest. He had already made his appearance at South by Southwest. He's a local hero anyway, so he didn't have to do a particular Beto declaration at South by Southwest. I think many in the audience who are local people were kind of assuming he would do it anyway, and sure enough, 2 days later, he did it. Now, he's officially in the running now.
I was thinking about you the other day when it was the anniversary of the shooting in Northern Ireland. And I don't know if it was the anniversary.
Bloody Sunday in 1972.
There was actually a conviction on that. And so you were at that.
No, there's a prosecution, Marshall.
Yeah, prosecution, yeah.
For the first time after all these years, since 1972, and 2 official inquiries, one that basically whitewashed the situation and pronounced the soldiers involved not guilty of any crime, because there was provocation, because the people in the crowd had shot at them, which is a preposterous notion, totally debunked by a second inquiry. So there were 2 inquiries, and then since then, 9 more years have elapsed since that inquiry, which prompted, by the way, the British Prime Minister at that time, David Cameron, to issue an official British government apology on behalf of the British government as a whole, historically, an apology to the Irish people for what happened in Londonderry on that day, known as Bloody Sunday. And then, as I say, 9 years later, finally, one soldier, still not identified fully, still hiding, still shielded by anonymity, under initial. He's a sergeant in the paratroop regiment. He's given the letter F as his only identifier, and he's going to be prosecuted, charged with 2 murders, 2 out of the 13 people who died on the day, shot by paratroopers, and one more, making a total of 14, who died a few months later from his injuries. So it's taken a long time, but yes, there is now some accounting. Though, of course, there are 11 more families whose loved ones died that day, who are in a state of great disappointment that nothing in the way of accounting is planned now in the legal realm for their losses. So it's a mixed message, this story.
Yeah, but you were there that day, right?
I was there. Yeah,
you were there that day. Wow. Now I have to go on. I have to go here, and I know it's probably going to bore people, but I have to go to Brexit.
Oh, if you were British, you might be even more bored about going there again. It's endless, 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 the story, and we still don't know where it's going. Of course, I mean in a way, there's a kind of collective mass national. I don't know what to describe the mental condition, really. Confusion is the simplest way of putting it. We don't know. Well, every question ends up with the answer, we don't know.
Well, it's so confusing that even now the European Union looks like they'll be agreeable to like an open-ended extension here, you know, to get this.
Well, I think they're going to say, well, yeah, if you need more time to think about it or talk about it, We're willing to give you that time, but no one's giving it. I don't think anybody would really want to put an open-ended option onto that. But and what the Europeans are saying very clearly is that if you want the time just to keep on beating each other over the head about this and not come up with a real proposal for how exactly Brexit is going to be conducted, then there's no point, and we'll shut down the time extension anyway. So yeah, we're in a state of flux as ever. And ask me any question, and my answer is going to be I don't know.
But if there was actually a hard exit where nothing was resolved, it would be terrible for the world economy.
It would be a very messy process, and sure, economies, business communities do not like uncertainty, and there would be a lot of uncertainty going on. I mean, just one of the great emblems for it now is just, you know, a simple one of an effort at simple imagination. You know, imagine, for instance, the ports on either side of the channel. There is a seamless connection now, commercially and in terms of customs and excise, between Europe, continental Europe, and Britain. No tariffs, no inspections, totally seamless. And of course, from now on, from whenever Brexit takes place now, it was going to be March 29th, but now it's not open-endedly, but it is extended for some months, perhaps. After that point, people are at the very least going to have to stop and be examined and imagine, we've seen it sometimes in this country, both sides of our southern border, for instance, those amazing lines of trucks for miles and miles and miles sometimes. Someone was making a calculation of how slow the process through customs in Britain on the Dover side and France on the Calais side, those two ports. The line of traffic would stretch back to the respective capitals, back to London and back to Paris in France. So, yeah, confusion, a mess, and a big clog, really, in the process of conducting business.
How long can Theresa May hold on, or is Brexit the thing that keeps her hanging on?
Well, the overall answer is I don't know. Yeah. But it is remarkable that she's hanging on at all, and I think the main reason she's hanging on is that, yeah, in a way, Brexit is her lifeline. No one else is coming forward to handle this poisoned chalice, so she's not threatened internally. She may be forced to go to an election rather than another public referendum. That's a possibility. It's hard to see the mechanics for that happening, but unless we get to the point where her own party declares no confidence in her, as has been part of the trial she's had to go through. She's had to earn the confidence of the party all the time. And that's expressed in a vote in the House of Commons. So that would be the mechanism for getting it to go to the country, as the phrase goes in Britain, calling a general election. And that of course is what the opposing party, the Labour Party, wants. It's kind of unlikely, though. But of course, the overall answer that I have to give, with the usual caveat, is just nobody knows. Nobody knows.
Boy, I tell you, I look at that. I wish we could call snap elections here instead of, I mean, well, look at this. We're a year away from really the first primary, and we're already in political phase for 2020, which is it's ridiculous.
It's also so just nauseatingly expensive and annoying.
Money is almost a vital element, of course. Yeah, it's expensive because one way of saying it is that it's vastly corrupt. I mean, but others would say that democracy is expensive. It's arguable, I suppose.
Well, democracy is expensive, but it's ugly at times. But what's going on now with elections was not envisioned by our forefathers at all.
And it wasn't meant to be an industry. Yeah. It's sort of like industrialized.
That's exactly right.
Prison.
It has become a part of the American economy. I mean, you take. Take away Bernie Sanders, who gets his money totally from donations. You know, he'll get hundreds of millions of dollars in donations. But you take away the rest of the way politics works, and it has become a major economic cog in the wheel of this country, and that's why it's going to be allowed to continue.
And it's just really, I mean, you know, we are sitting here, I just, you know, every month we have to figure out, and this is in terms of media, and this is why I mention it. Every month, we are trying to do something with Robin Hood Radio that isn't just the same old turn to the, it's just...
Here's how deep the problem is, David, and you'll appreciate this. I have a good friend that runs a cable ad company. He owns a couple of TV stations in New York State that are in between Albany and New York City. Okay,
these are not huge stations.
No, these are small stations, but they're stations nonetheless. The money he takes in. In the election cycle is staggering, David. These small TVs, last election, okay, not the one in
midterms or the presidential?
The midterms and the presidential election, he brings in, get set for this, he brings in anywhere in excess of $250,000 to $400,000. This is a small operation, and
how we end up with nationally $1 billion election campaign.
It's amazing, and
of course we don't. I mean, sorry, but we don't get any of that because we can't take.
No, I understand. Yeah,
but it's a cycle of money that goes from. That goes from big wealthy corporations, because now corporations are people and they don't have to just in this country.
Right,
and it goes to the politicians, and it goes,
and they speak through their money.
But
it goes to the politicians, and then it goes back from the politicians back to those same companies year after year. It's a cycle.
But it also has to pay for the journalists. You know, it's like all of this is, that's why it's an industry. And that's why, as Marshall says, and as you say, it's not going to stop. But it pays for the people who cover it and travel and sell the ads there's no way to stop it. But it's wrong and it's out of control. And it's, you know, somebody would be standing here and
change the financing rules. Yeah.
Yeah. But they won't.
And a good many of those thirteen, I think, candidates who declared themselves on the Democratic side, all of them are proposing campaign finance reform. We'll see how far that goes down the pike.
But how much is it costing them to be on the trail?
Ah, well, yes, each one is... having to find one way or another, and most of these Democrats are making a particular virtue of saying that they're not going to take, many of them anyway, the majority, that they're not going to take corporate funding and PAC type funding. They're only going to go for small fundings, small amounts of funding from many, many people, small funders, but many of them. Being the principal, modeled, of course, on Bernie Sanders' remarkable campaign in the last presidential run, or the primary run, anyway.
Right, and that's one of the things that is being said about Beto O'Rourke is, oh my God, he's got these fabulous fundraising capabilities. And what's not being said is people, I mean, and this is just a personal peeve, but a lot of the money that he got during his when he ran against
Senatorial
Ted Cruz,
run.
That's it.
Against Ted Cruz.
Against Ted Cruz was from all over the planet.
He raised $80 million, and last I heard, close to $60 million were came from out of state.
Exactly. Yeah. Because you can. And I say to anyone who sent from out of state, gee, wasn't there something in your state that maybe, or your town even, that maybe could have used some monetary attention? Like right outside your window?
Well, I understand, and David, this is where American politics goes wacky. People get involved in funding because they believe in the they believe in the Democratic Party, and so they want to get rid of a Republican senator. So they'll donate out of state. What they don't realize is what they should just do. If the Democratic National Committee and the Republican National Committee were run actually like they should be run, make your donation there and let them donate to Beto O'Rourke in Texas or whoever they want to donate to. That's the real strange thing, is that people don't utilize the DNC and RNC properly, and that's because the DNC and RNC are part of the problem the way they're run.
Right.
Well, exactly. You've got. If you want to put your trust in the national campaigning organizations, then I think you have to think again there too.
Yeah.
So round.
Can I just change the subject, because amongst all this excess that we're talking about, these millions and approaching billions of dollars that get spent on this and this whole process of going through the public's expression of opinion on the representatives of that public. I think we've got one remarkable instance of restraint in the last couple of days from all people, our chief executive, notable self-restraint from him in his role as communicator in chief. Now, in response to both houses of Congress voting down his, this is both houses of Congress and both parties, Democratic and Republican, voting down his emergency declaration for getting his wall built, an expression of Democratic will, the people's will, expressed against authority. One of the things that the founders of our country really did believe in very greatly when constructing all the checks and balances that are being used here. His response was a single word tweet, no less. And that was the word veto, of course, with an exclamation point. So let's not say that, it's all about excess these days. There's a very simple, straightforward, and a very unaccustomed degree of near silence from the president. Of course, it masks what will be an awful lot of activity once he attempts to make that veto, which he's promised and asserted, and everyone can see it is exactly what he's going to do. But I'm intrigued mainly because I've been in South by Southwest, and there is a remarkable exhibition going on there. It comes from one of the legacy media outfits of all things, although South by Southwest is so geared up to the most modern and the most up-to-date media constellations of all kinds. Sometimes it's a straightforward, very familiar media that wins through. And in this case, it's television comedy of all things. It's Comedy Central with their Daily Show has constructed what looks like a permanent exhibition. It's actually traveling, but it's so firmly constructed that it looks like a real permanent exhibition. The like you'll see in one of our big museums. It's the Donald J. Trump Presidential Twitter Library. It's a complete harvesting and curating. For once, the word is absolutely right. Curating of the president's tweets over a lifetime, or at least a lifetime of Twitter, from Donald J. Trump. So carefully researched, diligently researched in a way that would do credit to any number of our grand museum curators. And it's so revealing about the state of our politics at the moment. I recommend it. It will be traveling after it leaves South by Southwest. There's also a book, of course, a very hefty, ironically very hefty, grand book, because we can assume, not too unfairly, I think, that when the presidential library for this president is constructed after he goes, whether it be 4 years or 8 years, will in essence be a Twitter library anyway. And here we are with the comedy team of The Daily Show, clearly good researching journalists at work on that team, have put together what we will likely see anyway coming around in a certain number of years.
Well, that will be really helpful. And the other thing is it will be an excellent encapsulation of a time, because I think that whenever that is, whenever this occurs,
presidential rule by tweet.
Well, but also the whole concept of tweet.
That's how it was, yeah.
The whole concept of tweet and... like even saying that sounds so stupid. Oh, I tweeted. Daddy,
I
tweeted,
yeah.
Right? So you got...
It comes wonderfully from Trevor Noah, the host of Daily Show, because rather like me, because South African English is modeled much more on British English than any other dialectic form of it. And, you know, the word comes out of his lips so firmly as Twitter and tweet. And it sounds particularly demeaning.
It's so
stupid. From him.
But never mind. Not. I'm just. But what it will also show is the absolute scourge of social media, and how unhelpful. I mean, how interesting and how culturally mind-boggling and adjusting it has been. But we are going to be looking back on it. Going, wow, really? You did that?
Absolutely. And government by whom? You know, by the people, for the people, et cetera.
How?
Huge, bigly in contention when you see that, you know, the forces involved in this. Part of the analysis that they present this, and I make no apology for talking in these sort of analytical terms, the searching way that they put this material together is revealing of, for instance, who rules. What we're shown very clearly is the mind meld, if that's not too cerebral a term for it, between Donald J. Trump and the TV show Fox and Friends at Fox News. There are many, many examples in this exhibition of two things together. A broadcast moment from Fox and Friends, followed sometimes 14 minutes later, sometimes 8 minutes later, but close on it comes an exact replica of that same message as a presidential tweet. So there are very real political points being made here, and they're of, you know, in the end, vast historical importance. That's how this country was governed between these years.
Well, also, let's not forget that Mr. Murdoch, your friend, is behind. That Mr. Murdoch is behind Fox and has been involved in politics in various countries for years.
Well, of course, yes, a media mogul who knows exactly what his role is. It's to influence government policy as much as he can in his own business's favor.
Exactly,
three different countries. We know that he's done that.
But in fairness,
and more, of course, he's trying and more.
But the reason that I mention it is
because... And by the way, please don't call him my friend.
My point, I apologize. My point is that you know that, and Marshall knows that, and I know that, being of a different generation, but I don't know if your average 23-year-old knows that. And whether or not your average 23-year-old is listening, I think it's important if you're going to be in the decision-making business, you know, if you're not going to just leave it to an algorithm, you know, you might want to know who's behind...
Who is behind the curtain?
Right.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
So that being said, and I want to go back to that, is just not your friend, Mr. Murdoch. how
my unfriend.
You're not. Yeah, I don't think you can unfriend him. What a concept! Another social media concept. Oh, I'm unfriending
absolutely.
You.
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I'm banning you.
he's not a BFF, he's an NBFF.
Absolutely.
Best friends forever is the BFF, okay. So he's an NBFF.
Yeah, how can you declare?
No friend of democracy. That's a good way of describing it.
Oh, that's an NFOD. somebody ought to get me on the actual initials. What I wanted to ask is how Fox is Sky News, right? Is Fox Sky News?
Sky News belongs to Murdoch, yes.
Okay,
it's
sorry.
Not formally part. Well, the financial structure has changed. Of course, all the entertainment parts of Fox are now owned by Disney. But he sold them off. But so the news section, all the news activities are still under Murdoch, and that does include Sky News. Yes.
All right. Because when you if you are watching Sky News, I'm just always interested in the going back. And we've got a couple minutes.
Which comes out of Britain, of course, and is mainly to cover Europe as a footprint. But of course, in these days, we couldn't get it all over the world.
Right.
And you obviously do. I'm glad that you're checking on it.
I'm getting the hook.
Yes,
I can't even make my next point.
Make it next week.
Welcome back.
We're out of time.
Well, thank you. We'll talk further next week. I look forward to that.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
Of course, you can hear David here on Robin Hood Radio live on Friday, rebroadcast over the weekend, and also next week, I think it's Monday
right.
after the 12 noon news. Yeah, here on Robin Hood Radio.